Today is November 18th, 2015, and this is episode number 333 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a massive Buffy the Vampire fanboy. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, I am totally capable of or qualified to back up your claim about your fanboyism.
It's true. It is true. Some of the best storytelling on TV was that show.
Well, you know, the fact that Joss Whedon wasn't afraid to push the boundaries with his characters.
Yep.
That was a big thing.
The fact that he wasn't afraid to kill characters.
Yes.
That's a huge thing that Joss brought to, quite frankly, to TV, because there are a lot of people, a lot of shows have not been afraid to kill characters, but the vast majority of them have come in the wake of Buffy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And man, what a different story compared to the movie.
Yeah, well, let's not even talk about the movie.
I enjoyed the movie.
Oh, fair enough.
It's to me that the movie and the TV show are separate stories about Buffy.
Yeah, and they are, though, essentially all canon.
Yes, I know that.
And I think part of that is because the people who produced the TV show were also the producers of the movie. They essentially had those rights still.
Well, you know, and tying everything together, I think that was smart, because for the people that enjoyed the movie, to get little lines, like I remember very early in the series, Buffy is in the principal's office and is being chastised over something, and they refer to incidents that happened in the movie.
Yes, it's very, very true. It's very, very true. All right. Well, that is this week's Television Context Machine.
Yeah. If you have anything to comment on or question, right? Oh, wait.
Let's see. This week's show brought to you by Bushel.
Oh, awesome. Those guys are great.
Indeed. Indeed. And we appreciate their sponsorship.
We'll have to talk about them before the show ends.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
We should do that. They might appreciate it.
I'm betting they will, and I'm betting our listeners will appreciate it too.
Yeah, it's true, because they're offering good stuff. Like we're so lucky, we always have good sponsors.
Yeah, we really do.
We really, really do. Alrighty, so it's been, I was about to say a heck of a week, but that makes it sound. It's been a week. Let's do light and fluffy first. Let's do Feel Good, the Feel Good movie of the week first.
Okay. Just to get in the mood, I reached over and picked up the Apple Pencil that's sitting on my desk.
Excellent. That's good. Because that's what we're going to talk about first, because you actually got one.
I did.
They ship in 2 days, but you got one.
Yeah. 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 The one that I had on order, which I ordered on iPad Pro launch day, was until I canceled the order last night, still showing that it was going to ship in the second week of December. And if you order one online right now, it's a 5 week wait. But if you get lucky and happen to go into an Apple store at the right time, you can just buy one, because there are small lots that are showing up at the stores. Now my advice is, and this is from experience, just don't even bother calling the stores anymore, because it's a centralized system, and the information that I was getting was wrong, like flat out wrong on a regular basis. And then if you use the app on your iPhone, or if you go to the Apple website and place an order there, you're not hardly ever going to see in-store pickup as an option, even when the pencils are in the store. So what you really have to do is swing by your local Apple store and then ask them if they have Apple pencils in store.
This is shockingly sloppy for Apple. I don't like it.
I don't like it. I found it very frustrating.
I don't like it, the fact that they're available in the stores before the darn things are supposed to ship. And not because I don't want them to be available in the stores, because that's great. It's just the sloppiness and it's the poor communication. It's been a sloppy rollout. The Apple TV was a sloppy rollout. The iPad Pro is a sloppy rollout. And so is the Apple Pencil. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, well, and keep in mind, you're just not going to find an Apple keyboard in a store or a smart keyboard in a store anywhere.
The Apple smart keyboard.
Yes. Yes. So if you want a smart keyboard, or excuse me, if you want a keyboard for your iPad Pro today, you're looking at a third-party keyboard.
Or waiting.
Well, then that would preclude today.
Well, no, you could want it today.
But
you'll have to wait.
If you want instant gratification and you want a keyboard attached to your iPad Pro today and you're going to make that happen, geez, I can't believe the way I have to construct sentences just to appease your pedantry.
I am mostly pedantic.
Yes. Yes, you are.
Mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like accuracy, which is why I don't I like precision. And Apple has always been so precise about these things. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
It has been very frustrating. But to play off your word choice, precise, that's what this pencil is. It feels, or the stylus is, it feels really good in your hand. It balances really well. And you get incredible precision off of it. The
way to hijack the conversation into what we're actually supposed to be talking about.
Hey, sometimes that's how I roll. Yeah. Anyhow, this thing is amazing. On my iPad Air, which is a really powerful iPad, drawing on it has always felt really good with the right styluses. And it's felt like everything that I draw, the lines are all keeping up with me. And, mm-hmm. and I can draw fairly quickly. Then I get the iPad Pro, and all of a sudden I realize what it truly means to have those lines moving along in real time as you're drawing them.
You have been compensating. We all have been compensating.
Yes, but right? Until we had the iPad Pro, it wasn't obvious that we were compensating.
Right, it's because we were compensating.
Right. I mean, I still enjoy drawing on my iPad Air, but what previously felt very fluid for me suddenly feels a little less so. And it's just a completely different experience on the iPad Pro. And then when you get an Apple Pencil, it's a totally different game. It's just, it feels so much more natural than any other stylus I've used. And I just feel like the precision that I'm getting and the responsiveness that I get when I draw is leaps and bounds beyond what I've ever had before.
What about the accuracy and precision?
Totally top-notch. Like, if I put my Apple Pencil on the screen and make a dot, the dot is exactly at the tip. It's not a millimeter or two off to the side or above or below. It is exactly on the tip. Mm. And as I draw, that line tracks perfectly with my Apple Pencil. The big test for me is slow diagonal lines. And what I get on my iPad Air, and this is not a complaint about the iPad Air. It's just simply a limitation of the technology. Draw a diagonal line on the iPad Air with a small point stylus, and you get a wavy line. Mm. When I use my Apple Pencil on the iPad Pro and draw that same diagonal line, it is straight, like straight.
Could you use a ruler?
It doesn't matter if I use a ruler or if I just freehand draw. So
you can use a ruler. You could stick a ruler on your iPad Pro and draw.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I would use a plastic ruler and not a metal ruler, just so you don't risk scratching the surface. Yeah, you can totally do it. Yeah. The difference is that on the iPad Air and all earlier iOS devices, the sensor grid has a resolution of 4 millimeters, and that matches up with the size of our fingertips.
Right.
Totally makes sense. So all these fine point styluses that we're drawing diagonal lines and arcs and stuff with, what they're having to do is trick our iPads into thinking that it's a 4 millimeter tip, when in fact it's only a couple millimeters.
Right. The drawing apps heretofore that have been designed to work with the stylus have essentially been using tricks to make it work the way we think it should work, even though the iPad itself wasn't designed in that way.
Right. And while it can be frustrating at times, depending on the types of lines you're creating, it's also an amazing marvel of engineering that all these companies were able to come up with these styluses that do what they do, and they work really well.
And the software, right? The software on the drawings, on the drawing apps. Those developers have done some really amazing things.
Oh, they have. It's just wonderful. And the iPad opened up a whole new medium to me for drawing. And I absolutely love it. And now doing it on the iPad Pro, I'm loving it even more. And then yesterday when I was able to pick up an Apple Pencil, then that changed for me again. It's just wonderful. Apple really thought out this stylus. It balances so well.
I have some questions about the way you use it. Okay. When you're drawing, are you holding the iPad Pro in your lap? You have it on a table or desk?
Both. It just depends on what strikes my fancy for drawing at that moment.
Fair enough. All right. Well, so, and it makes sense that it would work quite well on a desk. But my real question is, how does that form factor work on your lap when it comes to drawing? How, you know, like the size of it?
It works surprisingly well. The trick is, for me, have a naked iPad Pro. Hmm. And right now we're limited in what our cases can be. So, you know, that could change with other cases. But right now, I like having the iPad Pro naked when I use it on my lap. And it just gets I do have one of the smart covers for it, which is, it's just the, you know, the flap cover.
Yeah, it's the flap. It doesn't have a back.
Right. And it's totally fine with that on there, but it just feels a little too loose on my lap when I have that on there.
What if you had, did they do a smart cover too?
Well, they have the smart cover and they have a smart case.
Smart case. I'm sorry. Did they do a smart case?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you try that?
Nope. Mm. I didn't, because at least for now, I'm just not interested in putting that on the back. My guess is if that's on the back, but you don't have the smart cover on, it would be just fine. For me, it's the looseness that you get as the iPad just kind of shifts around a little bit on the smart cover when you fold it back. So it's laying against the back of the iPad. So I just pop it off and go commando with my iPad.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it totally works. What I expected was that when I use the iPad Pro with a stylus on my desk, that I would find an angle where it would be best for me, or that I would prefer. And what I found is that it doesn't matter. My iPad can be at a slight angle. My iPad can be laying flat.
So you use it like a piece of paper.
Yeah, I'm using it totally like a piece of paper. Yeah, and the palm rejection with the Apple Pencil has been absolutely flawless for me.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, which makes sense, because Apple Pencil is not using capacitive touch.
Right.
So if I lay my palm on the display, that's being ignored by the iPad when I'm using the Apple Pencil.
I don't know what you need an Apple Pencil for. You got 10 of them on the end of your hands.
I know I encourage you when I do that, but that's okay. Your gadook, gadook, gadook is worth hearing every single time.
Still incredibly annoyed that Apple pushed that line so large for so long. Just so wrong. Anyway, be that as it may, I do have another question for you. So I don't have I don't have a picture of one in front of me, and it's not like I have like the capability of looking them up. Is it octagonal shape or round?
It's round, but that's okay because Apple weighted the stylus. So when you lay it down, it rolls to a specific point and then stops. So the Apple Pencil logo is facing up.
That's genius.
It is absolutely genius. So
you don't notice that weight when you're holding it?
No, the weight is fantastic and the balance is fantastic.
Well, that's where I was going to go is how, you know, talk to us about exactly how it feels in your hand. But what I meant by you don't notice the weight is you don't notice the fact that it's weighted just enough to make it roll where it should.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah.
Genius. The kind of thing that, you know, I'm like all pissy about this pencil rollout and the Apple TV rollout and the iPad Pro rollout. And, you know, and I'm still clearly bitter and annoyed at the, but
now give me a proper gadookadookadook.
Gadookadookadook.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm still clearly cranky about that too, but the flip side is something like that. The fact that it's going to roll like with the Apple, have you done a video on that? You should do a video just on that.
I'll do a video on that. I just haven't had time yet, but now that you say it, I totally need to make time. So yes, I'll make a video for people.
That's because that's the sort of thing that only Apple could do. Only Apple does do. Other people could do it. Maybe.
Well, other people will now.
Maybe.
I don't know if they'll do it as well.
Lots and lots of things that Apple has shown us. You know, this is the way to do it, and yet people still don't. Some things get copied, and some things don't.
Yeah, well, my guess is that other companies are now working on figuring out how to weight their styluses so that they roll and then stop.
Yeah, yeah, like that. Yeah, can you do that tomorrow? The video?
Oh, yeah.
Because you've been posting lots of great videos.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah,
good
stuff. I've been having fun with them.
Well, why don't we put a couple of links to your iPad Pro videos?
Yes.
In the show notes.
Yes. I'm thinking that there's a couple I think people will really like. Like when I show using the iPad Pro as a second display.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the one where I show iPad Pro as a Cintiq style graphics tablet where you can actually see the image on the iPad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which essentially is just the second display. It's the same thing, isn't it?
No. It's very similar, but no, because trust me. And when you watch the videos and you see what's happening, you'll be like, oh, yeah, I can see where there is the similarity, but no, this is not the same thing.
All right, so the long and the short of it is you like your Apple Pencil and you think it's the bee's knees.
I do. I really do. And I love that when I draw or write on my iPad screen with this, it doesn't feel or sound like a plastic tip on glass, which is what all the others feel like.
What does it feel like?
It doesn't feel exactly like using a pen or a pencil on paper, but it feels a lot closer. It feels much more natural than any other stylus I've used.
You know, I'm thinking that Apple could do a future version of the Apple Pencil. Apple is clearly becoming a master of haptic feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they could give us different vibrations for different paper textures.
They have a patent for that. So yes, this is something that not only has it bounced around as an ethereal concept, but it's something they've thought out enough to patent.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that would be really interesting. And it's also interesting, isn't it just fascinating how we spend so much time and effort, by we, I mean like the world at large, the tech world in particular, spend so much time and effort in making superior digital and electronic devices and products more closely mirror the analog world. Theoretically superior, I should say. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not superior. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I think one of the holy grails in the art world is to be able to replicate that analog experience. You know, so why not just do it with analog? And of course, there's a million reasons for that. But it's interesting to me. We, you know, like we come up with these huge advances and we do everything possible to make them look like the technologies that we're leaving behind.
You know, it is fascinating. But you're right. There's so many reasons why we would want to be able to simulate an analog art experience digitally, because it just frees up our artistic path that we have to follow when we're working on whatever it is that we're creating.
Well, because I mean, like, you know, how much of this though is because it's because it's what we know. For instance, you know, would kids growing up with an iPad and a stylus, they'd never even think about trying to or missing the textures of paper and pencil.
Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe this is a transition phase, and kids that are like, you know, like really young kids, like toddler age, that have never experienced anything else really, as they grow up using devices like this, they may not care to have different styluses or styli. They may find the one that they like that gives them the most versatility, and then they use that for everything.
Like, you know, I could see our grandkids 60 years from now doing the Apple Context Machine and,
LOL, do you remember when Jeff and Brian used to talk about matching analog displays? Ha 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 ha. Isn't that funny?
They were so funny and they were so myopic.
I know, it is so weird how they could not possibly see beyond their own flat, fleshy faces. Ha 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 ha.
Ha 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 ha. Analog bioforms are so lame.
I was, you probably couldn't see through the glass, but I had my arms in front of me and I was just moving them up and down.
Note the reflection. I could see there was movement, but I couldn't tell what you were doing. And now it totally makes sense. You were totally C-3PO arming.
I was that's it. That's what I was doing. I didn't realize it, but that's what I was doing. That delights me, man.
I'm glad, because if we're entertaining you, then
it's half our job.
That's it. Right there.
Half of our job. All right. Well, we have the other half of our job, talking about our sponsors.
Oh, right. And our sponsor today is Bushel. And actually, that's really cool, because Bushel is one of those companies that makes my life so much easier, because I have parents and they have technology. Here's where I'm going with this. What Bushel does is it's a service that lets you manage your mobile devices. And by mobile, that can include your Macs. So that's your iPhones, your iPads, your iPod Touches, your Macs. You can manage all these devices remotely. So perfect example, my parents both have iPhones. My mom has an iPad mini. I have all these iPads and an iPhone, and there's all these software updates that need to be applied, and trusting my parents to manage this on their own, it just doesn't work. So I added all their devices to my Bushel account, all my iOS devices to my Bushel account, and now I can use a single web interface and manage all the devices, push out the updates when they need them. I don't need to worry about trying to walk them through anything, and it's just all done. And then if a device gets lost, I can track it, or I can actually, you know, brick it so that if it's been stolen or lost and it just isn't going to be found, I can just kill the device so no one can do anything with it.
That's good.
It's really good. And if you only have a couple devices that you want to manage, no problem. It's free for up to 3 devices.
Seriously?
Seriously. And then every device you add in, $2 a month after that.
Huh.
Yes.
That is not much money.
No, it's not. And if you're in a position like I am, where you have family members who may not be as technically inclined as you and need that handholding, man, you can just, for $2 a month per device, you just take control of all that stuff for them. And for them, it's great because they don't have to worry about it. And for you, it's great because you know all this stuff that needs to happen with their devices happens. It's awesome.
That's good stuff.
Yeah,
that's good stuff. Now we've done a couple of articles about Bushel at the Mac Observer, so we're going to include those articles in the show notes.
Oh, excellent! We should do that.
Yeah,
and I guess we should tell people where they can get hooked up with Bushel.
Yes.
Yeah. So you just need to go to their website. It's bushel.com. That's bushel.com, and sign up. And they walk you through the whole process of making the certificate files that need to go on the iOS devices. And when you see what you have to do, your initial response is going to be, oh, this is going to be too much. But it's not. Trust me. The step-by-step that they take you through makes it so easy to do. And it's totally worth it. So check it out, bushel.com.
Yeah, and they're sponsoring us. So we would like you to show them some love. Because they're helping to pay the bills, and helping to pay the bills means more content for you.
It totally does, and this is a mutually beneficial deal because you're helping us get the money that we need to keep shows on the air, and you are getting a system where you can take so much stress out of device management, whether it's your own devices or family members or, you know, like a small business.
Yeah, we know that a lot of our listeners are the go-to people for their family and or friends.
Yeah, and this makes you the go-to hero.
Yeah, the go-to hero. There we go. And you get those first 3 devices for free.
Yeah, totally worth it.
Yeah, just please check them out.
Yeah.
Do you know if they make a remote cat management tool?
You know, I think you need to get a firmware update for your cat first.
It seems like the studio cat was a bit upset.
I'm not sure if it was upset or if Nightshade was just really excited about Bushel.
Oh, yeah, that could be it. That could have been it. She wanted to add her 2 cents.
Yeah, yeah. And I know she's been happy because her iPod Touch, she doesn't have to worry about it anymore.
That's excellent. That's excellent. All right. Well, we should take this particular opportunity to move into some not quite as fun games territory.
All right. Well, I'm
not fun in games at all. Actually, it's zero fun in games.
But somehow we'll find a way to make at least a bit of it fun.
I doubt it.
I like to think positive.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, we're talking about privacy, and we're talking about encryption, and we're doing so in the wake of the horrible and devastating and horrific attacks in Paris on Friday. And what day were the attacks in Beirut?
I think Beirut was on Saturday.
Saturday before.
Yes. It's so much tragedy coming so quickly. The days are blending together. And I can't remember for sure what day the Beirut bombings were.
And in the wake of those attacks and the bombings is a renewed effort on the part of governments and law enforcement. It's heating up even as we're recording here.
Mm-hmm.
A renewed onslaught on encryption for end-user encryption, end-to-end encryption.
Right. Yeah. So government agencies are pushing to get backdoors into our encrypted data, or in some cases, just to essentially kill that encryption altogether.
And part of what's driving this new onslaught is the idea, and at this point it is just an idea, that the terrorists used encrypted platforms of some sort.
Right. And it's important to note that this is just an idea because, as far as I know, there's no evidence that that backs up that they actually did use encryption.
Yet.
Yet.
But I mean,
it seems likely, but
you know, it seems incredibly likely. Yet. As a matter of fact, I think that there is zero chance that they weren't using some encrypted platform to plan, organize, and execute these attacks. There's almost no chance of that.
Yeah.
And
that seems reasonable.
And what we're seeing, mainstream media is participating in this onslaught by raising the question of whether or not encryption is a problem, whether it played a role in these attacks and whether it's a problem, because encrypted platforms keep law enforcement from being able to electronically surveil the bad guys, and it keeps them from being able to, you know, detect something that they don't know about through surveillance as well.
Yes, that's true.
And the thing is, of course, now, and we've talked about this. We've talked about it on TDO a number of times. We've talked about it on the Apple Context Machine a number of times. I've talked about it on other podcasts. I've talked about it on radio shows. You've talked about it on numerous occasions, and we've written about it at the Mac Observer numerous times. And the problem is that while it's true that encryption keeps the government and intelligence agencies and law enforcement from being able to snoop on these conversations by bad guys, it also keeps the bad guys from being able to snoop on us, steal our identities, steal our banking information, steal our logins and passwords, and do all of the things that innumerable criminal organizations and foreign governments are keen on doing.
Yes. And you brought up a really important point in a piece you wrote about this just a couple of days ago, which is that if we have these laws put in place that put the back doors in, so our encrypted communications, like say, like FaceTime calls or iMessage chats, can be decrypted, well, the bad guys are just going to move on to other technologies that are outside the control of companies like Apple and Google, and they will still find ways to have their communications encrypted. And the only people that will now have essentially unsafe encryption for their communications are the honest people.
Are we the people?
Yeah, just us, the normal guys and girls.
Because a backdoor available to one is available to all.
Yes.
This is known. This isn't theory. This isn't speculation. This isn't, you know, this isn't like, you know, me crying about the government coming to get us. This is a reality of encryption. A backdoor available to one is available to all. And right. What will happen is that the serious criminals, the people that the sociopaths that pulled off these attacks in Paris and pulled off the bombing in Egypt and pulled off the bombings in Beirut and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? Those folks will use end-to-end encryption on devices that are not mainstream, that do not have a backdoor, that are not accessible by the government. And yet here we will be using these platforms that the government does have a backdoor into, meaning that the more ordinary criminal organizations will be able to find them too.
Right. And here's a bit of irony as I think about it. If laws are passed that require backdoors into these devices, the very government agencies that are pushing to have these backdoors put in place will then stop using those services themselves and move over to other encrypted systems.
Yeah, that are outside.
Yeah.
Because they know.
Yeah.
And encryption is here. Encryption is not going away. Encryption is easy to implement at this point.
Stunningly easy to implement.
It would be trivial for a programmer, I think, how did Dave put it, worth half a salt.
Right, which is, by the way, I thought was a clever use of words because you salt your hashes.
You do salt your hashes, that's true. Oh, that's funny. A not very accomplished programmer could implement a text messaging system that uses end-to-end encryption in no time flat.
Right. Well, and if you look on Apple's App Store and on Google's Google Play Store, you will find many communication apps that offer encryption outside of what Apple or Google offer. So it's
now theoretically, if like you know the two biggest onslaughts here are coming for the two biggest onslaughts in the West are coming in the UK, which I expect will pass some sort of legislation first, and then here in the US, and if they do, so there's a couple of ways to do it. One way is of course to require a backdoor, which. You can't have a backdoor and end-to-end encryption. Actually, that's the way it works. That's funny. So,
right. So, yeah. Then it's no longer end-to-end encryption if you put that backdoor in.
Apple would essentially be forced to if it wanted to keep doing business in any country that passed such a law, would be forced to use a different encryption system or just to throw encryption out the window altogether. But they could mandate a backdoor. Or they could illegalize encryption entirely, or try to. LOL, it ain't gonna happen. But it would keep legal places like Google Play and Apple's App Store from offering it. It would keep WhatsApp from being able to offer it in those countries. You know, it would keep Apple from being able to offer it on its devices. But it wouldn't actually go away because again. The terrorist and criminal organizations could just implement it on their own and do their own homegrown messaging platforms.
Right, and I'm sure that's exactly what would happen.
I'm sure it's already happened.
Of course,
I don't know that it's already happened, but I have no doubt that it's already happened. If you know what I'm saying, there.
I know exactly what you're saying,
and it's just. Stuff is crazy, you know, and James Comey was, you know, he tried to raise the specter of, you know, was he the one who said that like Apple will be responsible when some child is killed? I'm paraphrasing.
I believe it was Comey that said that.
He's raised the specter many times that end-user encryption is going to result in the death of children. It's going to hamper law enforcement's abilities to do their job, et cetera, which is sort of true. It will hamper them from doing it the lazy way, which is to just sit back, gather up everything, and sift through it until they find what they're looking for.
True. Yes.
And that's part of what has me. You know, it's as so much communication started happening through the internet, as the internet grew up, you know, it had to appear like to the people who were charged with keeping us safe. It was just like this godsend, you know. It was just this amazing opportunity to just sort of sit back and let all the information come to them, and it's so much easier than having feet on the ground and developing sources and you know, developing informants and all the sorts of things that go into the old sort of gumshoe world of detective work. Mm-hmm. And they want to be able to keep doing that because it is easy and it is effective.
Sometimes it's effective.
It has been effective. How's that?
Okay. I'll accept that answer. Yeah.
But encryption changes that. And the solution is not to take encryption away from we the people. because we the people need protection from all the other criminals too.
That's right. We do. And, okay, so Brian, one of the things that I noticed out of the discussions that government agencies have been having since the terrorist attack in Paris, the FBI, actually I believe it's Kumho, says we don't know exactly how they were doing what they were doing as far as communication goes. Therefore, it must be encrypted, and that's a big leap right there from we don't know what happened to therefore it has to be encrypted.
But I'm comfortable with that leap personally. I know you seem not to be, and I don't understand why.
Okay. The reason I'm not uncomfortable with that is because I had to conduct many criminal investigations. And without the middle stuff that shows that that there was encryption happening, to make the jump from we don't know what happened, therefore this is what happened, is a very uncomfortable thing for me. If they can show other things, like they can start showing, here's some things that we know did take place. Therefore, as we put these pieces together, we can now extrapolate from that that there was likely encryption being used. And they may very well be able to do that soon.
Well, I'm comfortable with that leap, not from a court of law standpoint, where you have to, you know, in a criminal court of law, you have to prove something beyond the shadow of a doubt. Right. Yeah, I'm not comfortable with it from that standpoint. I'm comfortable with it from a logic standpoint. I mean, there is no doubt that because of the awareness of that has come about surveillance from Edward Snowden's leaks to everything that we've learned outside of Edward Snowden as well. There's no doubt that the bad guys have learned how to be more careful.
Of course.
And so, you know, in many instances, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the bad guys have gone back to more gumshoe, old school communications uses, you know, dead drops and, you know, all the stuff that you get from spy throwers of the 90s.
Well, sure. Yeah. If I were a criminal mastermind today, what I would do is use a system that for communication that is less likely to be monitored by the good guys. So that would be analog. Exactly what you just said. I would have people doing handoffs and all of that stuff because I would feel much more confident that the people that I don't want to see what's happening wouldn't because they're not looking there.
You know, that's just what a criminal mastermind would say.
But
at the same time, no proof, zero proof, zero knowledge of what the heck these people are doing. But I have no doubt that has happened. But at the same time, I also have no doubt that they're using some of the third party or if not homegrown encrypted communications platforms because they are so easy to develop. Right. There's one that I was reading a Bloomberg piece. Is it Bloomberg? Signal. Well, Signal has the Edward Snowden seal of approval. That's how Bloomberg put it. But it actually was partially developed with funding from the U.S. So maybe the bad guys will stay away from that one. There's just any number of ways that folks could use encrypted platforms of their own to communicate once they actually get in touch with each other. And it's also interesting to note, by the way, that ISIS has banned the use of iOS devices.
That I find to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, and I didn't know that. God, this is going back to – so again, this is from a Bloomberg article today. Bloomberg wrote today essentially a similar piece to what I wrote on Monday. But in December of 2014, ISIS banned the use of iOS devices because of their GPS location services that are built into them. So they could be used to track folks once they, you know, if the government was actually specifically aware of a particular device being, you know, owned or used by a particular person.
Now, I find that to be kind of funny because that's every smartphone, not just the iPhone.
Yes. True.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you can do device triangulation off of cell tower usage. Now, that's not as accurate as TV procedural crime shows will have you believe, but you can use it. And then also when you add in a GPS, which pretty much every smartphone has now, well, I mean, that's easy to track because a GPS location can be stunningly accurate.
Yeah.
So saying you can't use an iPhone because of GPS to me is rather silly because every other
smartphone doesn't. We're misreporting this. We should have actually read through this this article before we started the show.
Oh, that's just crazy talk.
So this is reported by Arab Crunch, the English version of Arab Crunch. Islamic State has issued a statement to its soldiers saying the iPhone, iPad, and all Apple communications products are banned among its people. The ban also includes any device that has a GPS.
Oh, all right. Well, then in that case, that makes more sense. But that does mean that that pretty much every smartphone is off the table.
Yes. And for a little bit of irony, the statement said something about the brutal crusader campaign against the Islamic State, which is just like hilarious in a very non-funny way, considering the brutality of said Islamic State. But, you know, that's for another show altogether. Statement said Apple products ban is because they are quote unquote dangerous, meaning by using them, there is no way to prevent hacking and tracking by the NSA, CIA, Mossad, and all the various other military intelligence agencies in the West and Arab world that collaborate with the U.S. So they're apparently not using Apple devices. Making Apple do put a backdoor in or eliminate encryption would not help with ISIS. So, you know, a little extra irony there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as I've been reading some of these statements coming from Comey and other people that are part of the U.S. intelligence and law enforcement community, it's kind of feeling to me like they're feeling that since they can't seem to track things and find information, that they're feeling ineffectual. And they want an easy answer.
Well, and I don't blame them. They have the job of protecting us. They have an incredibly difficult job. Oh, my God, I can't imagine how hard that job is today. Cannot even imagine how hard it is.
Sure. Yep, I agree.
I just don't want the wrong solutions that will end up in giving us nothing in return to be chosen. That's the thing here. We get nothing back. If we give up privacy and encryption, we get nothing back for it. We only expose ourselves to the bad guys. The bad guys remain free to be free.
Yeah.
So you know what? You know what? Tim Cook, Apple and Google and maybe Facebook and other tech companies need to go on a public education campaign. They need – like I would love to see like Apple's first ever – to my knowledge, commercial where the CEO's face is actually telling us something in a commercial on TV where Tim Cook says,
yeah,
like,
I don't think we've ever had that.
My name is Tim Cook. I'm CEO of Apple. He probably say it a lot better than that. But I want to talk to you about the importance of encryption and explain why encryption is important. He's done this in interviews. He's done this on many interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But those interviews tend to be paid attention to by the echo chamber. I'd love to see this message actually reach out and hit mainstream America, because it's mainstream America that is going to, at least here in America, that is going to be most likely to be willing to trade its freedom or privacy in this case for the illusion of security.
Yeah, and that really concerns me, because once we give up a privacy or a right, we don't get it back.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how the game works. And I really am not comfortable with the government and, by extension, the bad guys and everyone else having access to information that we would rather have encrypted.
Right. And that's not even, you know, we haven't even once delved into the aspect of this that to me is also very important, which is it's one thing when the government and intelligence agencies are looking for terrorists today. It's another thing when in 2 years or 5 years or 20 years or 60 years that the definition of a terrorist becomes anyone who is critical of the government.
Okay, that's a very scary leap, and I totally get why you would make that jump, because this has happened in the past.
It's happened many times in the past.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it usually happens, and it's kind of like it's because we're human, right? You know, it's so we're not even talking about that aspect. We're actually just still – our main focus has been being protected against today's bad guys, today's criminals, in addition to the terrorists.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're still in the here and now, but the changes that are coming or potentially coming very soon have real long-term ramifications.
Yeah. We must always be diligent against our own proclivities and our own tendencies as human beings.
Yeah. We have to be vigilant both with our government and with ourselves.
Yeah. While we're also vigilant against the criminals.
Right.
It's complicated. It's not complicated, actually. It's actually all very simple, but all this is complex.
Yes. I like that. It's complex.
Speaking of complex, we have an additional wrinkle.
Oh, do tell.
Anonymous has declared war on ISIS.
When I heard that, I actually laughed, because it's just so delicious that you would think that it was part of a movie plot.
Yeah, or you know, a cyberpunk book from 1990.
Yes, yes. So, and Brian, who's Anonymous?
So Anonymous is a group of hackers, anonymous hackers. LOL. They have adopted what's the guy? The guy's name?
You mean V for Vendetta?
The face. The Jean. How are you possibly not on top of what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about, but the problem is Guy Fawkes.
Guy Fawkes.
It just the name was stuck, and I couldn't get it.
And I wasn't even close.
Yeah, I was listening to the words.
Jean,
coming out of
your
mouth.
Jean. Come on, dude.
Yeah, Jean. Yeah, hello, my name is Guy Fawkes, but you can call me Jean.
Exactly. Oh goodness gracious, Guy Fawkes. They've adopted the mask associated with Guy Fawkes and as personified in V for Vendetta. Sort of their mascot / you know, trademark image.
Their moniker.
The moniker, that'll work. Anyway, they and heretofore their enemy has been essentially corporatism and government surveillance and government oppression. And of, you know, I would imagine there are some folks who would consider them terrorists because they break into private systems and steal information and release it to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And here they are declaring war against ISIS.
So they're using their same tactics, but against a terrorist organization.
Yes. And within, I think they declared this war on Saturday or Sunday after the Friday attacks in Paris. With those attacks being the specific reason for that declaration of war. And on Monday, they released a list of 900 Twitter accounts that were associated with Twitter, with ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter suspended those accounts.
You know, if I were running the FBI, CIA, DEA, Homeland Security, all these agencies, as soon as I heard, heard about Anonymous's new goal, I would have been like, are you serious? Okay, everyone, let's just sit back and wait, because this is going to be good.
Well, yeah, probably let's not sit back. It's interesting.
Figuratively speaking, of course.
It's interesting. I think that a lot of us initially had a yippee kind of reaction, because Anonymous, they are quite capable in the hacking realm.
Yes.
And by the way, they'll be quick to tell you so, because, you know, that's how they roll. And the matter of fact, they specifically bragged about being better than the hackers in Op ISIS, which is the hacking arm of ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, the precedent here is we have a non-governmental entity waging cyber war against a quasi-governmental entity, a criminal and sociopathic.
Yeah, I wouldn't
quasi
intern. I wouldn't call them even a quasi government entity.
Well, they are ruling an area. That
doesn't make them a government.
That's why I call them quasi. Fair enough. I in no way want to legitimize ISIS. They are completely antithetical to everything I believe. And not from a religious standpoint, from an oppression standpoint.
Yeah,
which they justify with their interpretation of their religion. But that's beside the point. It worries me a little bit to have. You know, this is kind of like this is the flip side of the slippery slope. So Anonymous clearly. The good guys here, right? And this, and Anonymous versus ISIS.
Well, you know, that's like, okay. So in an episode of Doctor Who, the Daleks and the Cybermen start fighting. Which one's the good guy?
Yeah, except for Anonymous has never been bent on human destruction.
No, but my point is, when you have the bad guys fighting the bad guys, that doesn't make one of them the good guy.
But Anonymous has never necessarily been the bad guys. They've just sort of been vigilante. And the slippery slope.
That's a good distinction, important distinction. Yes.
Huge distinction. And the slippery slope, of course, is where they might decide that they're right next. And if not the next time, the time after that, or the time after that, or the time after that.
Yeah. And okay. So. I'm totally with you. This is a dangerous precedent that's being set, and what should happen? I mean, what should there be repercussions for Anonymous and the information that they come up with and then dump on the internet? How should government agencies use that?
Well, now, government agencies should use it.
That's true. And
it's
and
public.
The United States, we have this this rule that goes along with evidence, and it's called fruit of the poisonous tree. So if you have someone acting as an agent of the government and they break the law to get evidence, and then that's used in court, then you can't actually use that in court, because the evidence was illegally obtained by what's considered the government, because you were an agent of the government. Now,
but Anonymous is not.
Exactly, and that's where I'm going with this. So as long as the government just kind of sits back and doesn't actually engage Anonymous with any of this stuff, the data that Anonymous gets and then dumps on the internet, well, the government can now use that without fear of having the evidence tossed out. I'm sure someone somewhere would present a case saying, oh, no, they actually can't use it. But until that happens, yeah, they can totally use that in court.
Well, above and beyond and completely aside from courts of law, especially courts of law here in the U.S., is the reality. So ISIS has been very, very good at using social media and online resources to disseminate propaganda, disseminate information, and recruit. And mm-hmm. they have been very, very good at this. This is why I think we've had 250 people leave the U.S. to join ISIS. There's been some 6,000 people in Europe that have left to go to Syria or in other ways join ISIS, and which is bizarre world to me, but whatever. And part of that is because ISIS is so good with this stuff, right? Well, Anonymous is, I mean, like, you know, taking these 900 Twitter accounts offline, yeah, Anonymous can go and make more Twitter accounts, but now people are going to have to find them again.
Mm-hmm.
And Anonymous can knock websites offline. It's not legal, but they can do it.
Yes.
You know, they can get and release IP addresses for where people are. You know, there's a lot of things that Anonymous can do that U.S. agencies could only do if they were breaking the law.
Right. And yeah, so if government agencies just kind of don't do anything, that information that gets dumped on the internet, well, that's just kind of free game for everyone, including government agencies.
Yeah, including Twitter. Twitter suspended those accounts.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the same thing can be done with Facebook accounts. Same thing can be done with Google Plus accounts. Same thing can be done with YouTube channels.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing can be done with a lot of different things. And I think that Anonymous has a significant chance of degrading ISIS's ability to use the internet for their own purposes. Not yeah. stopping it, but degrading it.
And that's well, we're on a very fine line right here. I'm okay with where it is right now, because if terrorist groups like ISIS are hampered in pulling off attacks, great.
Yes, great. Great, and we're going to have to – I mean, the reality is the cat's out of the bag. Whether or not this ends up being a dangerous precedent, only time will tell.
Right.
But in the meanwhile, I'm pleased as punch to see those ISIS Twitter accounts pulled offline.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I'm okay with that too, because it's making their job a little bit harder.
Do you see Ainsley and Sarah? They're jumping up and down yelling time at us.
Oh,
that's what those signs say. It's T-I-M-E.
Oh, man. I totally misread what was on those signs.
Well, it's because they didn't spell it right. They're just
they're
the worst interns ever.
Well, yeah, but they're our interns.
That's true. We love them.
Yeah, we do. We do. Yeah. Hey, well, since they're freaking out and they have to handle the post-editing of the show, I guess we mm-hmm. should wrap up so they can do their thing. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. And hey, why don't you follow me on Twitter? My Twitter name is @jgamut.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. Bushel was our sponsor this week. Bushel.com. That's BUSHEL.com. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Guy Fawkes, Brian.